Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. When you think about Steely Dan, you probably think about richly textured, sophisticated music. But once you read Alex Papademos' book, you'll think about Donald Fagen, Walter Becker, and the Daniverse in a totally new way. The title of Alex's book is Quantum Criminals, Ramblers, Wild Gamblers, and Other Soul Survivors from the Songs of Steely Dan. As the title suggests, Alex focuses his attention on the protagonists, Ricky, Dr. Wu, and Kid Charlemagne. Artist Joel LeMay has created beautiful technicolorific paintings of these characters to accompany Alex's powerful prose. Beta's resident musicologist and major Dan fan, Steve Gotcher, sat down with Alex to find out more. So sit back and let these two Babylon brothers take you through the career of Steely Dan like you've never seen or heard it before.
Walter Becker, co-founder of Steely Dan, was crossing the street late at night and got hit by a taxi cab. And later on, his explanation for what happened was, we were quantum criminals, two particles trying to occupy the same space at the same time. It was sort of the best imaginable title for a book that's kind of a rogues gallery of people who appeared in Steely Dan songs. And it sounded like a Steely Dan song title without actually being one.
One of the things that fascinated me the most is in the write-up for your book, it was said that Steely Dan songs are exercises in fictional world building. I found that eye-opening because I've always loved their lyrics, but I never really associated them with this notion of a whole new world-building kind of thing. But once I read that, it made perfect sense to me. Could you expand on that and give me some examples?
Yeah, I think there are certain songwriters who enjoy some of the privileges afforded fiction writers, if that makes sense. They create something sort of novelistic. I think in a lot of Steely Dan songs, in the majority of Steely Dan songs, what you get is the sense that you are sort of looking through the keyhole at a fully realized world. It's not necessarily the world of Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. It's not necessarily autobiographical, and it doesn't feel autobiographical most of the time, although sometimes it is. It feels like you are looking in on something that has been in progress, a story that has been in progress before you got there, and will probably continue after the glimpse that you get in the song. You know, they always said that they wanted it to feel like you were passing someone on the street and kind of hearing a bit of their conversation. If you listen to a song like Through With Buzz, I think is maybe the quintessential example of that, because whatever it's supposed to be about, and people have speculated that it's a metaphor for drugs, which is often, if you, when in doubt and you don't know what a Steely Dan song is about, that's probably what it is. But that's a song where it just launches right into it. And the first line of it is,
he takes all my money. You know I'm through with buzz. Yes, I'm through with buzz. All right. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's somebody complaining about a person that they know who's sort of that they've reached the end of their rope with. I feel like you get that so many times. You get that feeling that you are listening in for just a second on some, somebody's life in a really, profound and strange way. And I think they were very good right at putting that into a song, which is, it's harder than it looks. They just kind of drop you in and you have to figure out who's who. And you right have a relationship as the sort of the kind of the imaginary subject in this song sometimes too. It's like, oh, of course, somebody's speaking to you and you have to figure out what they mean.
How did Becker and Fagen arrive at this kind of songwriting style?
They were an incredible sensibility match, and they kind of met their creative soulmate very early. And everything that they did together as Steely Dan felt like it was first and foremost them trying to amuse one another and them trying to play to the things that they all liked. And so they've talked about how they have, when they met, they shared the term that Fagen used in his kind of eulogy post for Becker after Becker passed away, was a constellation of enthusiasms. They loved Nabokov, and they loved Thomas Berger, who wrote Little Big Man. And, Zappa, I think, was in that mix as well. I think they always wanted to do some of those things that fiction can do. You know, maybe they were frustrated novelists, or maybe they figured out something that was comparatively easier and more fun than actually having to sit down and write all of the 600 pages of connective tissue and everything that's required to, you know, to generate a novel, that they were able to sort of like get just the fireworks of fiction into their lyric writing.
You talked about the song Do It Again, and you say that over the ensuing decades, Steely Dan will rewrite this song over and over again. Can you expand on that?
I think that's, I mean, it's the first song on their first record. It's their first hit. It's one of the songs that people really associate with them. It became a, you know, sort of a signature. And it's about a loser, or a series of losers, depending on how you look at it. It's about someone who keeps making mistakes and somehow lives to make more mistakes. In the very beginning of their 70s run, and you get to the end of their 70s run with Gaucho, and you have a song like Babylon Sisters, which is narrated by a man who's going into some sexual rendezvous type of situation that everyone has warned him about, and yet he's gonna do it anyway. This is no one night stand, it's a real occasion. Close your eyes and you'll be there. It's of a perfect day, distant lights from across the bay. Babylon Sisters, shake it. I think there is something in so many of these Becker Fagan songs about people kind of racing toward their doom. They know exactly what's happening, but it's the urge to some kind of a self-destruction that so many of these characters end up pursuing.
I'm very curious if the format, the way you wrote it, which is, it seems so unique to me, not the fact that it's essays, but the way you wove the talk about the songs and the information about the band together. Is that what you intended at the beginning, or did this come together as you started working on it?
I think that the idea of using the songs as a way to get into the biographical aspect and the kind of cultural context, I guess that was instinctive more than anything else. That just seemed like the most, the way that made the most sense. And especially because we know every second of what the Beatles did, of what Bob Dylan did, like, you know, in their kind of, you know, classic era. Steely Dan is a murkier subject, and there was a lot of obfuscation in the way that they talked about, the way that they worked. And it was a straight biographical treatment was, I don't think it was ever gonna work. But also, I feel like it's just, you know, I started out as a rock critic, and that is my kind of native literary culture. And that form is about seeing what you can jam into, you know, a record review, basically, like what you can sort of, how much cultural context and how much history and biography and autobiography and poetry and all of that you can pack into what is essentially kind of consumer reporting.
Mm-hmm. In 1977, Steely Dan released Asia. That's a probably their most popular record. What are some of the things that contributed to the success of this record, the wild success of this record?
Well, there's a few things. I mean, I think that it is the point where their songwriting and their relentless pursuit of perfection in performance really lined up. That's a big part of it, that it's just, it's a great batch of songs recorded by an incredible group of players. They were working with more New York musicians. They had sort of finally moved back to that world, and so it's a different group of players. And it's the best case scenario for this kind of record making, you know, and for what it can produce, because it is a just a technically flawless album that is also, to my ears, incredibly soulful and beautiful and full of heart and thought. It sold a lot of stereos back in the day. This was the best music to use to kind of sell you the, you know, check out the, you know, the sound on these TK-421s.
It's another thing to hear from the TK-421. So let me just pop in this 8-track and you just give a listen, tell me what you think, okay?
It is a kind of tight and perfect and unimpeachable suite of songs to me.
A few years later with Gaucho, that perfection goal started to work against them somewhat. What happened there?
I mean, I think a couple of things are happening on Gaucho's. One of the things that is going on is, yes, maybe they've taken it too far. One thing that's happening on Gaucho is that Walter Becker has been struggling for a while, for a kind of undetermined amount of time, with some personal issues, some substance abuse issues, and is a little bit missing from the process. I think even before he is injured in that cab accident that kind of gave the book its title, he's sort of drifted away from the process. And so if you think of Steely Dan as this creative love affair between these two guys, Donald and Walter, and this thing that they were doing principally to please themselves, once Walter is out of the picture, I think it becomes less fun to work in the way that they were working. And there's just this vision of them going over and over and over these little tiny pieces of the songs and endlessly mixing and remixing at a time when that process took a lot longer. You see Donald sort of alone and miserable in the studio. And I think it's, as much as anything else, it's because he does not have, like, you know, the guy that he's, you know, sort of accustomed to working with. It's as burned out an end of the 70s record as you could ever hear. And it feels like the toll of those years is coming to bear both on the characters and, if you read between the lines, on Donald and Walter themselves. It's a remarkable record, though. It's really, really good. I think it's that one is maybe the one that really turned me into a Steely Dan fan.
How do you think the Steely Dan history, when it's finally written, what is it going to say about Steely Dan?
That's a good question. I hope that they're seen as one of the most important and fruitful creative partnerships of their era, that they're seen on the level of like a Rodgers and Hammerstein, like Lennon McCartney, Bacharach David. I hope that Becker and Fagen are seen on that level. And I hope that this songbook continues to be something that people return to and return to.
Yeah, great. Alex Papademos, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. Your book, Quantum Criminals, is a great book to look at, and it's even better if you read it. Thanks for talking with us today.
Steve, thank you very much.
Alex Papademos is the author of Quantum Criminals, Ramblers, Wild Gamblers, and Other Soul Survivors from the Songs of Steely Dan. He spoke with Steve Gotcher. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Mike Mills, Josh Mills, and Alex Papademos.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta.
even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Well, it's so good to be surrounded by my friend on the crew.
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
I don't mind working to make a buck, but this is for the birds.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Boy, you sure are a funny man!